Okay. So, hello everyone, good morning, and first of all, thank you very much to the organizers for this very nice workshop on Quantum Spin Ice, and to give me the opportunity to present some of our work here. So, first of all, I should introduce that I've been asked since I arrived I am now in Bordeaux, at the University of Bordeaux, and I've been asked where it is, so it's here. The circle here, so it's in the southwest of France, actually not so far from Spain, so that's where I'm based now. And today I'm going to talk about two or three different papers on different materials, ytterbium titanate, which we have heard quite a bit yesterday, and also terbium titanate. And this work has been done in collaboration with all of these very nice people. And first of all, I will talk about ytterbium titanate, which has been done in collaboration with people. Many of them are in the audience today. And about multi-phase competition in ytterbium titanate. So the good thing is, I think I don't need to spend too much time reintroducing this Hamiltonian. This is the generic, most general symmetry allowed nearest neighbor Hamiltonian on the power core lattice, which can take different forms. And here I put in the form of coupling J1, J2, J3, J4, as we have seen also a bit yesterday. And if we consider this Hamiltonian with J4 equals to 0 and J3 negative, we have this phase diagram, which again we have also seen a few times yesterday, as a function of J1 and J2. And then thanks to the parameterizations of several groups, experimental and theory groups, of ytterbium titanate, erbium titanate, and erbium stannate, we can put these materials tentatively on this phase diagram here. And today I'm going to talk at first about ytterbium titanate, which you see is very close to this boundary here. And as we know, is quite complicated to understand, to describe. And for example, just for the specific heat, many different results have shown quite substantially different specific heats depending on the kind of crystals, powder samples, single crystals, and even between different kinds of single crystals. And one of the things is that this sample dependence might be coming, or very probably comes, from the fact that ytterbium titanate is very close to this boundary. So to study that today, we're going to consider the parameters as defined by Ross et al. In 2011. And in particular, because you see that ytterbium titanate is very close if you move J1. It's very close to the boundary here if you just move the value of J1. So we're going to fix J2, J3, and J4, give them this value here. So J4 equals to 0, that's within the error bars for this parameter set. And J1, we're going to move it from minus 0.09 to 0. And by doing so, we're going to cross this boundary. And in particular, so if we take this generic nearest neighbor Hamiltonian I was talking about before, and we fix these three parameters and we let J1 vary, we move along this small distance here on the phase diagram, and we move from a ground state, which is a splayed ferromagnet, to a gamma 5 antiferromagnet, which corresponds to psi 2 or psi 3. So this is the story at zero temperature. But now, what happens for classical Heisenberg spins at finite temperature? This is a phase diagram, which, by the way, a similar phase diagram for slightly different parameters, not far from, also close to the boundary, has also been done independently by this group, Robert et al. So you see, at zero temperature, you have the splayed ferromagnet up to minus 0.029-ish. And after that, you have gamma 5. But gamma 5, that's actually, it's a global U1 degeneracy. So you take all the spins, you rotate all of them at the same time, and you still are in the ground state, I mean, energetically in the ground state. But this degeneracy can be lifted by thermal and quantum fluctuations. And that's one of the key points of this talk here. So first, we're going to look at the thermal fluctuations. What happens? So within the U1 manifold, thermal fluctuations, we select psi 2, which is this state, or psi 3. So you see that at the frontier, you have a little bit of psi 3. But then as you increase the temperature, psi 2 quickly comes in. And this is a first interesting thing, because on one hand, you have this splayed ferromagnet, which is the 6-4 degenerate. So that's the cubic axis. Plus z, minus z, plus x, minus x, plus y, minus y. These are the 6 degeneracy of the ferromagnet. While the antiferromagnet has a whole global U1 degeneracy. So what happens is, you see the green line, that's a classical spin wave estimate of the boundary from between Psi-free and split ferromagnet, you see it follows nicely the Monte Carlo results, the classical Monte Carlo results. But then when the Psi-free disappears and the Psi-2 comes, the boundary bends towards split ferromagnet. That's because this region has a continuous degree of degeneracy, degree of freedom to fine tune the lowest state, to find the states that minimize the free energy. And so you have a sort of free energy optimization, which allows that at the beginning you have psi free, but then as you increase temperature, the psi 2 comes in, helps it, and wins even more over the split ferromagnet. So which is why this boundary is bended toward the split ferromagnet. Because here you have more freedom in order to fine tune, to find the correct ground state that minimize the free energy. And then that means that in this region, between this value and this value, you have a multiple step ordering. So here you have two phase transitions, and in this small region, you even can have three different phase transitions as you cool down in temperature. So this is already just classically, you have already a quite complex phase diagram. And now, what happens when you add quantum fluctuations? First, at zero temperature. So what we did is, first, semi-classical with linear spin wave theory, which means quantum fluctuations up to linear order. And we wanted to compare the split ferromagnet with the Psi 2 and the Psi 3. And with a slightly evolved linear spin wave theory, because we need to compare states which are classically excited. And so we only have a saddle point, so that makes things a bit subtle, but it's still possible using this method. It gives an upper bound of the semi-classical energy of the Psi 2 and Psi 3 states. And so you see that as you move J1 here, so this is the same J1 parameter between minus 0.09 and minus 0.03. The energy of these states, at first the lowest energy is the split ferromagnet, the blue curve. And then you have at minus 0.062, you find that the new ground state in linear order in quantum fluctuations becomes Psi 2. And because it's an upper bound, it means that this frontier is at least here. It could be a little bit shifted to the left, but it's at least at this value. And so we see that before, the classical frontier was at minus 0.03. And now we've already shifted to minus, so we have doubled the value of J1 for the frontier between split ferromagnet and the gamma 5. So the quantum fluctuations have shifted the frontier between these two phases to the left, to a more negative value of J1. And this picture is confirmed by exact analyzation of 4 or 60 sites, so relatively small cluster, but the point is, if we compare the variance of the ferromagnet order parameter of the gamma 5, so the variance that's related to the susceptibility, that's related to the fluctuations. So intuitively, if we have a bigger variance, we will have a bigger susceptibility of this order parameter, and we will be closer to a phase transitions into this order parameter because of divergence of the susceptibility. And so we, as an indication, we shows that the order parameter which has the biggest variance is kind of favored at zero temperature in this exact normalization. And so we see that for this value, we are roughly at the frontier between the two, between gamma 5 and split ferromagnet. And if we increase J1 a little bit, the gamma 5 wins over. So this gives a frontier approximately at this value of J1 again, which is consistent with the one obtained from linear spin wave theory. So these are two approximated methods, but both methods show that quantum fluctuations shift the boundary at zero temperature to more negative value of J1. Then what we did also, we considered quantum fluctuations at finite temperature. And so we did the same. This is a correlator which corresponds to the variance again. And we calculated the difference between gamma 5 and split ferromagnet. So in short, it means that in this region, when delta C is positive, gamma 5 is winning. When delta C is negative, the ferromagnet is winning. And we see that if we start from J1 equals to 0, it's always gamma 5. We are clearly in the antiferromagnetic region for all temperatures. Then at minus 0.03, gamma 5, then delta C stays 0 for quite a long time. This is a classical point of the phase transition. And then when we get to J1 minus 0.05, so below that, we see that at first, at high temperature, the ferromagnet is winning, so the fluctuations are stronger for the ferromagnetic order parameter than for the antiferromagnetic one. But then you have an upturn, and in the end, it's gamma 5 that is winning. So even if at high temperature it's favored by ferromagnet, at low temperature, ultimately, the gamma 5 seems to be winning for these values of J1. And if you continue to do the same, you see this upturn that continues. And we have tentatively put the boundary at finite temperature, coming from this numerical link cluster calculations, at a J1 of minus 0.07, which is somewhere between these curves here. And the breadth of the curves correspond more or less to the error bars of these calculations. And we have done similar calculations with high temperature expansions. So coming from high temperature, decreasing the temperature again. And here it was quite difficult to make the calculations converge. But we can see that again, the blue curve here corresponds to minus 0.06. And that's roughly at the frontier between delta C equals to zero. So that's more or less at the boundary between split ferromagnet and gamma 5. Here, the red one is quite clearly ferromagnetic, and the black one is quite clearly gamma 5. This one corresponds to minus 0.03 and minus 0.09. So all of these different methods, classical Monte Carlo, linear spin-off theory, exact generalization, numerical link cluster, and high temperature series expansions, what it tells us is that this is a phase diagram in the vicinity of this frontier, so between the parameter of Iterum titanate and the frontier between the ferromagnet and the gamma 5. Classically, we have this. And quantum fluctuations, they shift all of this to the left, so to more negative values of J1, which are roughly at minus 0.06264 at zero temperature, and more or less minus 0.07 with relatively big error bars at high temperature. So the frontier is quite clearly shifted to the left by quantum fluctuations. And these results suggest that the phase diagram conserves the same shape when you add quantum fluctuations, that you have a sort of boundary going this way. But this is still an approximation. But quantum fluctuations quite clearly shift everything to the left. And now let's compare it with neutron scattering data of ytterbium titanate. So first of all, if we calculate the structure factor from numerical link cluster for parameters of minus 0.06, which is within the error bars of Rossetal parameters, we get this picture for the spin flip and the non-spin flip. Then if we calculate the same structure factor for Monte Carlo simulations, so classical Monte Carlo simulations, for a different set of parameters and slightly different temperatures, but for a different set of parameters, we get these pictures. And we see that this neutron scattering, the structure factor, looks very, very similar. And this is the closest comparison I could get between numerical link cluster and Monte Carlo, which means that if we want to compare same data, so structure factor, we need to have a more negative values of J1 if we add quantum fluctuations as compared to the classical boundary. And then if we take, again, for this Monte Carlo at lower temperature, so we lower the temperature here at 0.3, and we compare it with the values of parameter for minus 0.09, which are the same one as Ross, we see that the comparison between this Monte Carlo and these experimental data, so here we have a quite close comparison between Monte Carlo simulations and experimental data of ytterbium titanate, and it's less the case for this value of parameters. So I should say that we chose the temperature such that the ratio of the temperature over the transition temperature is the same for this parameter, and these experiments. And what this tells us, so here, I should emphasize, this is not a criticism of any given set of parameters. What it says is that we need to be careful in the sense that depending on the method we use, depending on the amount of quantum fluctuations we have in the theoretical method we use to map the experiments with the theory, we might get some slightly different values of parameters. Here you see, if you have this, if you have this structure factor from experiments, you will need this value of J1 for numerical link cluster and this value of J1 for Monte Carlo. And that's because ytterbium titanate, and that's one of the big difficulties of ytterbium titanate, is at the frontier between different ordered phases. And so because it's the frontier, if depending on the method, quantum fluctuations will shift this frontier to slightly different values. And so necessarily, you will have some slightly different values of parameters depending on the method that you use and on the amount of quantum fluctuations, and possibly of more evolved theoretical method. So that's the first message. Then the second thing is we compared our classical simulations in this case with some results of this paper of Elsa Lotel and collaborators for single crystals and crushed powder. So the point is, in this paper, so they found different values of transition temperature, but they found a peak in specific heat, and then what looks an hysteresis in the magnetization at a slightly lower temperature. So it was 150 millikelvin for the hysteresis in magnetization, and 195 millikelvin for the peak in specific heat. And heat shifted to higher temperature for the powder sample, but still there is a small difference. And this is roughly in agreement with the picture that we have here of a double phase transition, with first an anti-fermenting phase transition, so which is not accompanied by any onset of magnetization, and then a first order, because this line is first order, so a first order phase transition into the ferromagnetic state, which could give rise to this hysteresis behavior here. And interestingly also, if we add a magnetic field, so here it's a magnetic field in the 0, 0, 1 direction, so in a cubic axis. If we add the magnetic field for this value of parameter, you see that at zero magnetic field, you have par magnet, anti-ferromagnet psi 2, and the split ferromagnet. But then the magnetic field will kill the anti-ferromagnetism and will favor the ferromagnetic state. And so you see the transition of the ferromagnet, which increases, up to reaching this point, which might be a trochanteric point, by the way. And then you have this reentrant behavior between par magnet and the split ferromagnet. So for these values of parameters, we find critical magnetic field of roughly 12-ish millitesla. And in these experiments of Lotel et al., they've shown that the first order transition, there was a change of behavior when you increase the magnetic field at around 20 millitesla, depending on, I think, maybe depending on the sample, if it was powder or single crystal. But again, it's in the same ballpark of roughly 10, 20 millitesla for these experiments. And then commenting on the talk of yesterday, we had the talk yesterday of Colin Boholm showing us this reentrant behavior in iterant internet as a function of magnetic field in a different direction. But if you take this phase diagram and you flip it, here you see that this reentrant behavior here is very similar to this behavior here, where when you increase the magnetic field, you shift the transition temperature to a higher value. So this is for different orientation of magnetic field, but this is in agreement with what has been shown yesterday. So of course, as was mentioned yesterday by Colin Boholm, the difference of temperature is much smaller here than in experiments. And also another thing is that, as far as I know, unfortunately, I'm happy to be proven wrong, but in experiments, I'm not sure people have seen the Psi 2 phase here in this region. So if someone has, I would be very happy to hear that, but I'm not sure. And one other thing is that, as was discussed also yesterday, in all of these ytterbium materials, you have a big bump at around 2 Kelvin in the specific heat. And this bump can be reproduced already when you add quantum fluctuations. So this bump seems to be the onset of quantum correlations at the level of 1 tetrahedron, which is absent in classical simulations. So maybe the reason why we don't have this Psi 2 phase is maybe we will have something different because of the quantum fluctuations, which will reorder the nature of this phase at intermediate temperature. So, and then the last point is about the chemical pressure, that if we move the from ytterbium stannate to ytterbium titanate to ytterbium germanate, we can cross around this boundary, as was discussed yesterday by Alana Halas. So, and I would be happy to, and there have been, just to mention, some interesting experiments on physical pressure on these materials also, where you can introduce the long-range order. So, and the last point, which I will do very quickly, about ytterbium titanate, which this day has been done with Rodrich Mössner, is that, so why do I talk about ytterbium titanate? That's because actually one of the first quantum spin liquids on pyrochlore, which also one of the first has been coined as quantum spin ice material. And recently it has been shown to sit at the frontier when you do some stuffing at the frontier between a complicated quadrupolar ordered state and a quantum spin liquid. So everyone who has worked on turbulent titanate knows that it's very difficult. I mean, trying to fit all of the singularity physics and everything together, that's quite difficult. And you never know where you're going to go next. So we followed a slightly different route. And we looked at two experiments of groups in Canada and in France of turbulent titanate in a strong 110 magnetic field. And what they found is that they found a long-range ordered phase induced by the magnetic field where you have double layers of monopoles. And this is interesting because actually, I mean, usually you favor all in all out with antiferromagnetism, or you favor two in two out with ferromagnetism in spin ice. But favoring monopole phase with three in, one out, or three out, one in, and this complicated structure of two layers, one after the other, there was no simple mechanism for that. And so what we did is we considered that we used a minimal model where we considered that turbulent titanate is quite nicely and is relatively close from a spin ice model with Ising spins and some and Coulomb physics, and also has very strong magnetostriction. It was done already in the 80s by Russian groups. They have shown that you put a magnetic field and you can have a very strong, very large magnetostriction in turbulent titanate, which means possibly magnetoelastic and magnetoelectric coupling. So what we did is we used the theory developed by Komsky and also by Katsura for Fulgiforix and mentioned by Sarkar et al, where monopoles, so three in, one out, and three out, one in, can have an electric dipole, not the other one, which means you can favor magnetic monopoles with electric dipoles only via magnetoelectric coupling. And we use this Hamiltonian with nearest neighbor interactions, magnetic field, magnetic dipolar interaction between spins, and electric dipolar interactions between the electric dipoles. And at first, if you just consider nearest neighbor, you get spin ice in yellow, or all in and out in red. But then as you add simply electric dipolar interactions on the monopoles, you get this green region in between for the world region, which is a monopole double layer that has been observed in terbium titanate. So just by adding a magnetoelectric coupling and electric dipolar interactions between the monopoles, you get this monopole double layer, which is stabilized, which is the one observed in terbium titanate. And I'm going to go quickly here, but if you include DM, which is a magnetic dipolar interaction between spins, this green region is stable. And even if you add a magnetic field in the 110 direction, you will favor this green region over the all in all out region here. So this double layer phase is stabilized by electric dipolar interactions. And can be further enhanced, stabilization can be further enhanced if you put a magnetic field in the 110 direction, as was done in experiments. And if we compare the phase diagram of the experiments on terbium titanate and what we get here, so at low magnetic field, we cannot explain what happens. This is too complicated for this simple model. So low magnetic field, that doesn't work. But high magnetic field, we go from paramagnet to this double layer region, as observed in the experiments. And I thank you very much.
So the multiprobe coupling that you introduced in terbium titanate. So if that was strong enough, would that distort the structure? Would that give you a different structure?
So if that was stronger, it could. So in you have different mechanisms for this multiferroic. One of them simply comes from the hybridization between the with the oxygen in the middle, and so it could. So for example, we did a kind of back of the envelope calculations, and if you have a small distortion of the position of the oxygen in the middle of the tetrahedron of 0.6 picometer, this could explain this value of strength of the electric dipole moment, which could explain this phase diagram here. And this shift of 0.6 picometer, that's consistent with what you can see in multiferroics. But in this case, it's only the oxygens which are moving, not necessarily the pyrochlor structure.
So it doesn't reduce the symmetry to try.
to a first approximation, it's not necessary. But then, as was mentioned yesterday, you could have more complicated mechanisms that could also distort the structure of the power curve. But in a first approximation, it's not necessary.
Question about your phase diagram. What's the reason for the thin sliver of
which one?
Phase inside Psi 3, if you go back to the...
To interval titanate?
Yeah. Yeah, this... the previous one.
This one?
No, the one
previous. Yeah. Sorry, it's coming.
Sorry, the one before, yes.
This one?
Right.
That's some complicated reentrant behavior. So it's basically if you calculate at 0+, if you calculate the contribution from the excited states at 0+, it just happens that as you move from here to here, there's a small region where, well, Psi-2 wins over. And this has also been studied by Michel and collaborators for the quantum fluctuations, for the quantum case between Psi-2 and Psi-3.
So yeah. he can do a power contact for what the energy would go with all these couplings. And you find that this is a mathematical answer, but you find that the solution for that is a cubic polynomial in some regime of parameters that has three real roots. And so you get that sliver is a manifestation of a small region where the cubic polynomial has three roots. And so
it's
too
it's
too that's not very much.
No, so physically, intuitively, I don't know. It's just because if you do the equations out of it, you get. So
if you have G3 equals to 0,
you have a nice straight line here between Psi 2 and Psi 3. And as you increase G3 negatively, you have this bonded region that appears. And then you have this small, hair thingy that comes in between. But I don't really have an intuitively physical reason.
It's a quantum problem, right? Classically.
So you were calculating the diffuse scattering for parameters related to ytterbium titanates, and given that's an integration over the inelastic scattering, right? These are actually inelastic people. So can you explicitly calculate the inelastic scattering?
We could semi-classically. So for example, if you take the classical Monte Carlo simulations and you add some molecular dynamics onto it, you can have some real semi-classical dynamics. And then once you have that, you do the Fourier transform in energy space or time space, and you can get the inelastic.
And so what do you see at zero field? Because it's very anomalous, right?
Nope.
Any other question?